Children, we're starting.
That's right.
Showtime! Another Fresh Picked Pod from audio2u.com. Shutters Inc. with Shelton Muller.
You might wish to stay on and listen.
Hi, and welcome to episode 83 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from audio2u.com. With me on the line once again, Shelton Muller. How are you?
Good morning, Bruce. I'm pretty good, actually. A good night's sleep, a cup of coffee. Haven't had my Nutri-Grain yet, but I'll work on that.
Mate, you got the priorities right. You got the coffee.
Well, yes, one must have one's nutrition. That's in the morning, get the old cerebrum firing.
That's it.
And you're welcome back. You've just come back from a wedding on the Gold Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lovely part of the world, folks.
It's a top spot.
Yeah. I mean, it's a bit touristy, you know, especially around Surfer's Paradise and things like that. But I suppose you got to expect that that will be the case.
Yep.
But once you get out of there, that sort of area, it's quite lovely.
I love the hinterland behind the Gold Coast.
Beautiful.
That is just beautiful up in the hills.
Absolutely.
Dinnaburra, Springwood, fantastic.
And how'd the wedding go?
Mate, it was great. It was an open-air garden wedding for those who know the Gold Coast, it was at the Cascade Gardens, which are about a kilometre north of Jupiter's Casino on the Gold Coast Highway.
Mm.
And Andrew and Sharon had booked there's like a little gazebo in one of the gardens there, and they'd booked that. And it was a beautiful sunny winter's day. It was probably 19, 20 degrees Celsius. So it wasn't
nice.
Too cold, but it was pleasant. And and it was just beautiful. And, you know, I naturally had a circular polarizer on my lens, so I got these lovely rich blues in the sky. And the grass, thankfully, was actually a bit green. So
you did on the way home as well. And I hope our listeners have been to audio2u and seen your pictures on the way home. Very nice, Bruce.
I was pretty happy with those.
Yeah.
I sort of nailed it.
You did. You got beautiful whites, in the textures of the lighthouse, and then beautiful blue sky behind. And look, in the light of this, I must make a very public announcement. This will be the last Shutters Inc. podcast that I ever do. And I'm sorry to break this to you on air, Bruce, but I see no need for me at the moment. I think you're on your own there, buddy. You can handle this. Why should I waste my time when you know it all? Not only that, but whenever our listeners send in pictures, they're always so damn good.
So we do get some great pictures.
Like, you know, I sort of feel like Spider-Man, really. You know, nobody wants me anymore. You know, I'm trying to do the city some good and, you know, fix everybody's photography, and nobody wants me anymore. I think I'll put away my spider suit and you know, just get on with my life.
We still appreciate your input, trust me.
Thank you.
Interesting comment about that, about the photos that I took of that lighthouse, was that I didn't allow the camera to do its own metering. I was thinking back to what you were saying a couple of weeks ago when you were talking about the grey cards.
Yes.
And when I look at a scene, I try and imagine, okay, out of everything I'm seeing here that I'm, you know, that's going to be inside the composition, if it was black and white, which part of this would be a neutral grey?
Mm.
And I, rightly or wrongly, assume that the grass would probably be a neutral grey in a black and white image.
Yep.
So I spot metered off the grass.
And did it work?
Well, I think it did.
Yeah. and that's great that you mention that, you know, that because you were in a situation that is very bright white, and then the blue sky, and that white could have thrown you into serious underexposure.
Yeah.
Had you not thought of that. So good on you. It works, doesn't it?
It does.
You know, it gives you, and did you check your histogram for a good range? I imagine you would have.
After the shot, but the 7D doesn't give me a live histogram, yes, I did look at them afterwards.
Yes. Well, look, I think only the Olympus does live histogram. The E400s, the E410s, 500s, 510s, I think only they do.
Did you not say that one of the high-end Nikons was coming out with it, or am I just imagining that?
I don't think I said it, but it could be a great thing. The Ricoh GR that I'd love to use, and the new Caplio GX100 have live histogram, and because you have manual control with dials over these things, I use it all the time.
Yeah.
But I'd love an SLR to have live histogram.
That'd be great.
It would be, but of course you have to have live view, which not many SLRs have. So, but what you did basically was, in essence, in old-fashioned terms, much the same thing. You know, metered off a neutral gray or neutral tone. tone, which, yes, like you say, if it had been a black and white image, that would have been your neutral gray. And so, you know, I'm glad that it worked for you. You've put Shutterzinc principles into practice.
Well, I was certainly trying to.
That was, well, you've listened to 82 of these things.
Well, that's true. It had to run off eventually.
So, if it ain't working for you, man, I mean, I don't know who it is. You've probably heard more of these things than anyone.
Probably.
You know, it'd be interesting to know if any of our listeners have listened from episode one. If you have, we'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely.
Because we're wondering whether you're getting sick of us by now. But I'm sure there's got to be somebody who's heard every single issue of Shutter's Inc. So, you know, if you have, yeah, let us know.
The other thing that I was very impressed with myself about was that I did almost no post-processing on those shots at all. So I sort of really felt like a lot of the things you've spoken about, you know, I'd put into practice, you know, rule of thirds and
you did. Leading lines,
positive and negative space, leading lines, you know, the neutral gray metering and getting it right in camera.
Oh, wow.
And I sort of thought, well, and that's why I came away from it feeling really good about what I'd shot there and thought, I'm going to put these up on the blog because I'm really happy with what I've done and I really feel like I've taken on board so much of what you've been telling us to take on board.
Oh, thank you. And it worked. I'm really happy that you did. You know, it's funny that you mentioned these things. I looked at the photographs and I thought, yeah, he's seriously considered all these things. I didn't know that you'd metered, you know, for looking for a gray. And I'm glad that you didn't have to do much post-processing. You know, that really is, that's terrific, mate. And congratulations.
Thank you.
And the most important thing, apart from the fact that your images were successful, and I don't even know that's the most important thing. Perhaps the most important thing is that you walked away from there feeling really good.
Yeah.
You know, you'd put yourself into it. You had controlled what was there in front of you, what was going to happen in the camera, and it was no longer a case of, you know, pick up the camera, point
and
shoot.
Let's hope this works.
And hope that it works. I mean, it probably wouldn't have because you had such high reflection off those white buildings. It probably would not have worked, and you would have had to go back into post-processing and bring your white point up, you know, or elevate the exposure in curves or whatever you would have had to have done. But the fact that you didn't have to is very gratifying because it basically means that had you shot it in film, they would have succeeded. You know, if you'd shot it with tranny film, transparency film, they would have succeeded. That is a great measure of success. You know, so well done.
Thank you.
We do want to see some of your wedding photos too. I know you weren't the official photographer, but if you've got something nice from the wedding, you know, that would be terrific. I did a wedding recently. If anybody wants to see some pictures from that.
I always love seeing your wedding shots.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah,
thank you.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, I'll send you a couple from a recent wedding. There are also some on my blog if you just want to steal them, Bruce. Go right ahead. You can go to my personal
blog.
Let's
not joke about that, okay?
No, that's true. That's very true. I might have told you. Was I saying last week that, somebody, a business sent me an email once with one of my pictures in it. Yeah, hello. Thanks for using my pictures. Good on you. It does happen. So, you know, yeah, it's one of those things that's difficult to avoid sometimes.
Yeah.
But there it is. Oh, I haven't got that many emails this week. I think either everybody's been too busy taking pictures, not taking pictures, or working to feed their families or something, but not that many emails this week. Bob Fisher, of course, has asked us to explain how he might achieve rear curtain sync with his Canon Speedlight 550EX. Now, not being a Canon man, Bob, I can't really sort of get into the technical details on that at this short notice because I only just got your email, mate. But if you're a listener and you do have a Canon 550EX Speedlight and you know how to set it up for rear curtain sync, put it on our Shutters Inc. blog, would you? Because that would be very handy for Bob. The only other thing I could think of would be, mate, that it's actually my camera. It's on the camera body that I set up for rear curtain, not because the camera has to dictate to the flash when it fires. Really, that's what it's all about. The camera has to tell the flash not to fire at the opening of the shutter, but rather just before it closes. So I would say it's probably a camera control not so much a flash control. But at this short notice, I haven't had a chance to check it. But Bob, I would suggest that that's what you do. Mm. And Bob Iverson, mate, a long time ago, you proposed the idea of some workshops. And I noticed that you had put it up on a couple of forums, etc. How are you going with that? If that's still an idea you have, I'm still very, very interested. But as we were saying off air before we got started, Bruce, yep. We've only ever had one email, one contact from a female listener.
Yeah.
And hello, Holly. Holly in Canada, Holly Sassoon in Canada. Thank you for being possibly one of the few female listeners we have. And I find that interesting because most women actually take most of the pictures in the world. They're the ones who usually, you know, map a family's growth by the snapshots. And I know there are a lot of fabulous women photographers. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, Annie Leibovitz for one. You know,
I mean, that was the one that immediately came to mind.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, and women have a unique vision. They have a different vision to men, and of course, they're connected in a different way to men, and it bears out in their images. There are some in Australia, some awesome female photographers, Lisa Saad, Robin Hills, just to name a couple that come straight off the top of my head. But I have friends. My wife is a very good photographer, and you know, friends of ours who are the wives of my photographers who take up the camera. A friend of mine named Jody is a great photographer. She's not a great she doesn't have a, and she's probably not in some ways like, you know, my wife. She's great, has great vision, but is not as interested perhaps in the technicalities of photography as she should be, because every art has a science connected to it, and photography certainly has a science connected to it.
Yeah.
But women have a very unique vision. And if you're, you know, if your wife hasn't taken up photography, if you're listening and you think, boy, it'd be great if my wife got on board, there's no reason that she couldn't. And I would suggest that, you know, she would have a completely different vision to you. I know when we're traveling together, my wife and I, she sees different things to me and sees maybe the same thing from a completely different angle. I know men can do that too. Mm-hmm. But there's something very unique about the female perspective on photography. So if you are a woman and you're listening to this, we'd love to hear from you and love to hear what you think about being a woman as a photographer. I only mention this because most of our interaction comes from men, and so therefore I'm presuming that most of our listeners are men.
Yep.
But because women have great vision and make fabulous photographers, not necessarily better or whatever, because that's a very personal thing, but just that their take on the world is different, because women think differently to men, very obviously. If you're a woman, and we'd love to hear from you, we really would, to see what your thought is about photography and maybe to include some of your images.
Well, I can tell you from recent demographic work that I've done on the listeners to all three of my podcasts is that the skew is still, you know, and podcasting's been around almost 3 years now, is still around about 75% male.
Right. And maybe that's because what male men hang around computers more, apparently.
Possibly.
You know, and that could be the thing. But if you're a listener and you male and you know of women in your group of friends or workmates who are into photography, suggest our podcast to them. Yeah, get them on board. In fact, I mean, really, we'd appreciate you suggesting our podcast to everybody. But it'd be nice to hear from, you know, the females of the species, our fellow female photophiles. try saying that after a couple of beers, which is early in the day, so I haven't, you know, had a couple of beers yet. But yeah, we'd love to hear from you, and because I know in Australia some of our top photographers are women, as probably, you know, as in the, you know, as is in Great Britain or the United States or anywhere else in the world, and we'd love to hear from you. We really would.
Absolutely.
But I'm happy to get past the giggle part. If you are, Bruce,
yes, mate.
I actually thought we've talked a lot about portraiture. We've talked a lot about people photography.
Yeah.
But there's the idea that of today's subject came about when I was discussing a wedding with a couple the other day, and she herself is a photographer, and she's asked me to photograph her wedding, which is coming up in September.
Right.
I'm always honored when I'm asked, especially by a photographer, to, you know, to photograph the wedding. To be the photographer of choice at a photographer's wedding is quite an honor, because they know really what they're looking for.
Yeah.
And to hire you is, you know, a terrific thing.
That would almost add more pressure to the gig, I would imagine.
In one way, yes, and in one way, no. In one way, yes, because you know, you've got to pull out, you know, you've got to really make this work. Because hey, they, you know, to a lot of people, a nice, sharp, colorful photo is the best thing they've ever seen. But to a photographer, that's only the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, you have to, like you say, pull out all stops. On the other hand, they make it easy. They allow enough time because they themselves photograph weddings and they know what the time constraints issues are and the pressures on photographers can be. So they also make sure that their locations are chosen correctly for the right time of day. They organize their ceremonies to be at the wrong time of day so that the photography is at the right time of day.
Yeah.
And they honor your process while you are actually going through the process and can even, you know, contribute. And I have absolutely no problems with that. Anything that makes my job easier on the day is fine. They also honor your viewpoint and your perspective. I've never had an issue with photographing a photographer's wedding where whereby they've said, oh, that's wrong, or, you know, don't do this or don't do that.
Yeah.
And I've actually had more pressure from people who, very rarely, but, you know, people who know nothing about photography, not wanting me to do this, that, or the other when I know that the image would work.
Yeah.
But this subject came up when the bride said to me that, you know, she didn't want a lot of, or, and this was also because her fiance, her groom, her husband-to-be, is not particularly keen on the whole having his photo taken process, and a lot of men aren't, you know. I mean, it's usually the bride who's really keen on having her photo taken, and I find in my weddings I concentrate on the bride a lot more than I do on the groom. But that always works because the grooms are okay. They, you know,
the brides always look better.
Oh, yeah, that's for damn sure. And, you know, they're the ones. When it comes to photography, they always say, oh, you know, it's the bride's day. I don't agree with that in terms of, you know, the wedding itself, but I certainly agree in terms of photography because they're the ones usually most, you know, interested in the photographic process. This groom that I photographed on Sunday last from the wedding I was just talking about, actually, he was the one initiating most of the photography. Didn't want me to go. I had to go. Didn't want me to go. He wanted more pictures, and so that's fine. But getting back to the bride, she's asked for a lot of non-posed sort of photographs, you know, and we just want you to sort of, you know, capture our day, and we want it to look spontaneous. We want, you know, we don't want a lot of set-up stuff.
Right.
And I said to her, look, that's fine, but you've set aside 2 hours for photography. What is going to happen, you know, what is going to happen that is so spontaneous during those 2 hours that we don't actually set something up, you know? Yeah. And she went, well, hello, yeah, you're right. She agreed with me on that front. But what she didn't want was a lot of, you know, boring or overly romantically contrived images that don't convey who they really are. And it's a very difficult balance to find. I mean, she set aside this time for photography. We're in a winery at in a beautiful valley with vineyards and old barns, and it's just going to be beautiful.
Yeah.
In September in Australia, in Melbourne, if you get a beautiful day, the light is spectacular.
Yeah.
You know, Australia has very harsh light. You know, September in Melbourne is a beautiful time for light here. So I'm really looking forward to that. But I had to explain to her, you know, if you're not doing anything, if you're standing around, then what are we going to do? We're going to have to set up photographs. If you're interacting with friends or if there's something actually happening, I can get great candids. But you know yourself, I said to the bride, that, you know, every person has his or her own dynamics. A lot of couples say, oh, look, we want spontaneous photos, but they don't realize that the photos they've seen, which they wish to emulate, are images that are either of professional models acting spontaneous, or they are of spontaneous situations that are particular to those two individuals, you know, in the photograph, or that individual in the photograph. Everybody's personality is different, and everybody's wedding day is different. Everybody's situation is different. So you can't necessarily capture something that doesn't happen. But you can actually create the moment as a photographer to make things appear more spontaneous. And a lot of people like that idea. And so I thought what I'd do is talk to everyone today about some techniques whereby when we're photographing people, to make them look and appear a little more candid, spontaneous, at ease. Because often people are, you know, happier with those kinds of images than they are with the sort of formal portrait setting. Whenever you point a camera at someone, people usually face the camera, you know, someone's pointing the camera at me, I better look good.
I better square up.
Exactly. You've took the words right out of my mouth, to quote Meatloaf. They square up to the camera, quite literally. And if they're a bloke, you know, an Aussie bloke, they'll do the old crutch protection pose, you know, with don't you love that? Or better having my photo taken, better protect my crutch, put their fists right there, smack bang in their crutch, you know, and the legs about a foot apart with the old crutch protection pose. We, you know, let's face straight on. Who stands like that? You know, nobody. So, you know, yes, people, and even brides, often I've even worked with models who will do this, they square up and bring their shoulders square to the camera, and then they'll do a fake smile and generally lose all their natural expression. Now, that's fair enough because we're nervous when a camera is pointed at us. We're not all models, and we're not, and generally, you know, a bride and a groom or anybody who's asked to have their photo taken is not personally conscious of their best angle. A young model, you know, will have posed a few times in front of the mirror, or, you know, been directed, or maybe she's gone to some modeling classes and has an idea of what her best angles might be. But I know I, as a photographer, often disagree with what I think their best angles are or what they think their best angles are. Young girls particularly have this tendency to look at you with the face on an angle and at the corner of their eye in that sort of, you know, Paris Hilton style of modeling. And I hate that. I really do. I prefer to bring the face a little more round, because it otherwise, you know, it takes a little bit of emphasis off the nose and gives us a better idea of the face. Not necessarily completely straight on, but I prefer to sort of do that. But anyway, just most people aren't aware of how to pose, and so they ask for spontaneous photos, but they don't necessarily always get them, and they don't always know what best facial expressions to do. Men often try to be very, very serious in their photos, right. You know, thinking, well, this is what we do, we're men. But often men look very much more handsome with a full smile.
Yeah.
I know my wife hates my photographs because I'm one of these guys who's on the wrong end of the camera when I'm having my photo taken, and I always have this stupid curly lip smile or whatever, and she likes the photographs taken of me when someone's grabbed me with full smile. I don't, because my face all wrinkles up, but that's, you know, another story. So we need to understand this process ourselves, and getting past this awkward stage with the subjects can take some time. It is awkward because those first few minutes of photographing someone, they are doing all the, you know, what do I do? But because you're the photographer and they're a willing subject, hopefully, you've got control, and you need to let them know that you do have control and that you would appreciate their trust. If they argue with you, what's the point? You know, I am the photographer, trust me on this. And the great thing about the advent of digital is that you can take some photographs, you know, of them doing things they may not trust, and show them immediately. Look, see, it works. See what I'm doing? Because they can't see that maybe you've got a longer lens on and you're only concentrating on, you know, maybe, you know, waist up or head and shoulders. So they're not exactly sure what you're doing. Showing them a couple of pictures and showing them just how wonderful they look is a really great icebreaker. But you do have control, and you can help your subject feel comfortable by just helping them relax. Now, first of all, it's a great thing initially in the shoot, have a conversation with them as you're shooting. And that's a great, you know, icebreaker, because suddenly they're talking. And while they're talking, you can take photographs. If the person's interacting with you, it also gives you an opportunity as the photographer to look at their and study their personal dynamics, how they move, and how, you know, their own body grace, as it were, reflects their personality. If they're not comfortable standing, get them to sit. If they're not comfortable sitting, get them to stand. If they're not comfortable doing either, get them to lean. You need to be flexible yourself. If you have one rigid set of poses that you apply to all your subjects, that won't work, because everybody is different. I know I've photographed hundreds of weddings, for instance. And what will work with one couple in terms of a pose will just not work with another. And no matter how hard you try to implement one set of ideas onto another group of people, It just sometimes doesn't work. Everybody has his or her own personal dynamics in terms of how they move, how they pose, and in how, you know, and how they establish themselves. You need to, in the initial part of the shoot, that's your aim. Not necessarily to get the best photograph, but to get a handle on their personal dynamics. So you need to be flexible yourself. Not all of the poses that you choose will be flattering for that person. So you need to be discreet as to which ones complement that person, which they're more comfortable with. Because if a person appears uncomfortable in the photograph, it can naturally, you know, distract or detract from how comfortable you as a viewer look, you know, look on at that picture. And what works with one person doesn't work with another. So understand, first of all, that maybe the first few minutes, maybe it's the first half hour, everybody will be different. But every person has his or her own dynamics in terms of movement, facial expression, and posing. And that is what you set out to establish initially. Try a couple of different angles and perspectives for each pose. Always try to look for an interesting way to frame their pose or what they've done after you've established this level of comfort in your viewfinder. Now, that may mean that you stand up on a chair or, you know, on a ladder and you actually photograph down. It may mean that you want to come into the wide-angle lens and create a little bit of interesting dynamics or go back with a telephoto. That's, you know, once you've got that established, it's now your job as the photographer to do your photographer thing. They've got themselves done. You've got some relaxation going on. You've got this rapport between the two of you established after however many minutes it takes. Now it's time for you to work your magic from the photography perspective. So try then, I mean, from the outset, try to convince them that you are trying to get the best picture of them possible. And as I said before, they need to trust you. Some people will be more comfortable in front of a camera. Others will require more effort. But you need to be persistent if indeed you want to get some spontaneity and comfort in your images. It takes a little while. And the great thing about digital, mate, is that we no longer need to worry about how many frames we've shot until we get the right one.
Yeah.
Because, you know, look, just shoot
as long
away.
As you've got a memory card handy.
Big enough, yeah. And, of course, we've got 8 and 16 gig memory cards now, so that shouldn't be an issue. Yeah. Even with RAW, that's not an issue.
Yeah.
There's no reason you can't delete, you know, some of the images that just aren't working. Although I like to, you know, I don't like deleting in camera. I like to keep everything because there's always blackmail later. You know, so if you want to blackmail them with a stupid picture, you can post that on the internet and say, look, you know, but that's another story. We'll talk about photo blackmail another time. It's very successful, actually. They need to understand that you are really out for their best interest, that you do. Because you're a photographer, you like taking good photographs. So they need to understand that, all right, they might feel a little silly, but what you're suggesting for them is really working. And we, you know, I had this situation with brides particularly. Well, grooms too, all the time. You know, they'll say, oh, this looks silly. Or, you know, you'll create an interaction in terms of a pose between the bride and groom. And, you know, some couples, their personal dynamics are very different. Some couples are pawing at each other all day, and others are sort of, you know, hello, very friendly, you know, sort of, well, here we are, all married, what? You know, and why did I do a British accent then?
I have no idea.
I have absolutely no idea. I'm sure the Brits are very romantic. But every couple is different, and sometimes they won't trust you. Now, you've got two choices then. You can say, okay, well, you know, you don't like this, so we won't do it. Or if you believe this shot really works, then you need to convince them and just say, look, for the sake of a minute, for 60 seconds, for that, just trust me. I am the photographer. Now, normally, I would never suggest to a young girl to believe a photographer who says, trust me, I'm a photographer. But in this particular case, I would suggest it. Because you really are out for their best interest as a person who's having a portrait taken. And, of course, for you as a photographer and your own personal sense of achievement. So once you've taken a few frames, your subject getting used to the idea of, well, yeah, being the center of attention. Some love it, some don't. You may want to then move on to simple tasks. If the girls get them to turn and blow a kiss or laugh, turn away from the camera, turn back. It takes the sub, you know, fool around, have some fun. There's if it's a couple, they can tickle each other. They can. What I often do with weddings is I say to the couple, pretend I'm not here. I'll set them up into a kind of pose, Bruce, and then I'll I'll just say, okay, now you've got the idea of what I'm after. Okay, I've set you up in, you get the idea. Now pretend, I just want you to cuddle each other, snuggle each other, laugh with each other. I don't want you to think that I am here. What I'm going to do as you do this is circle you like predator to prey, and I'm going to snap away, and I want you to have fun with the fact that I'm doing that, but I just want you to have fun with each other for a minute. And sometimes those are the best photographs that you get, and I will send some photographs that I've done along those lines so that you get an idea of what I'm talking about, so that you can post them up on Shutters Inc.
Beautiful.
Try that, for instance. If it's only one person, then, you know, if it's a girl, well, usually they're a lot more, often more fun, and so they'll turn and, you know, do the slow motion shampoo commercial with the hair, you know, they'll blow kisses, they'll laugh, that kind of thing. Some, because of personality, will be more open to that than others. But you can assign certain tasks, anything to do, anything that perhaps takes the subject's, you know, mind off the fact that they are trying to be natural or trying to get it right. I photograph people all the time, and you can see the look on their face. Am I doing this right? Am I doing this right? You'll say to a groom, look, I just want you to lean against this wall. Just put your shoulder blade against this wall and just put your hand in your pocket, mate. And you can look, that is the most natural pose for a man, right? Leaning against a wall with his hands in his pocket. But you can see the groom. You can see him as he's trying, and he's saying to himself, oh, am I getting this right? Am I doing this right? And you just say, mate, okay, pretend I'm not here. Lean on that wall. Just lean on that wall, stick your hand in your pocket. I'm not here. I'm not even taking a photo. Just do it. And suddenly you say, oh, okay. And they just, and suddenly the whole idea of, am I doing it right? Am I doing it right? Is completely removed.
Yeah.
And that is often the thing. You're giving directions that, from your perspective, are the most natural kinds of poses and positionings, and they're asking themselves, oh, am I doing it right? Am I doing it right? So do something that takes their mind away from the formality of that task. And this is a trial and error thing, but you need to work through it. Like we say, shooting digitally, you have the advantage of taking quite a few options and then getting the right one. If it's not working, try another one. And your imagination and their personal dynamics are the things you're working with, and you can imagine then that you're almost limitless in what you can do. You're capturing a still photo. The idea of the task is that you get an image that does not appear contrived, even though it is. You are contriving the situation, you are making this up, but the image won't look that way. Once that's achieved, then off you go. Once you've got that level of comfort happening, well, you'll enjoy yourselves very much. Your subject will enjoy his or herself, and you will enjoy the process. Don't get too caught up in trying to make one particular kind of thing work. If it's not feeling right, if it's not working, move on. Don't force it. So many photographers force a particular kind of, as we've said, a pose or whatever that they've worked with other people that just doesn't work with this person. Keep the mood and the atmosphere light and happy. Hey, it's only a photo session. It's fun after all. You know, if it doesn't work, the world ain't going to end. But I reckon we're going to get... And how many... Look, Bruce, how many photographs do you really need to achieve is what you've got to ask yourself and what your subject has to ask him or herself.
Right.
How many photos do we really want? We really only need one. We need one photo that will really, really work. And if you can't do that in a photo session with, you know, this kind of interaction between the two of you, then, well...
Time to chuck the photo gear on eBay and...
Yeah, chuck the photo gear on eBay and pick up a guitar or something. But if you can't do that, you know, really, especially after trying all of these things, then, you know, I don't know what's going wrong. But keep it light. Make your subject laugh if you've got a good sense of humor. A good sense of humor for a photographer is one of the most vital tools of his trade. A light mood, a light atmosphere, a good sense of humor will get it all happening. I hear time and time and time again brides who have been bridesmaids before telling me that the photographer that they worked with on the day that they were bridesmaid for this other friend of theirs wedding was a complete so-and-so. He was so arty, so serious. Right. So this is my day, and I'm an artist, and I will work this way. And why am I doing a French accent without it? Anyway, you know, and they do this thing. You know, I'm a photographer. Look, I have the ponytail. You know, and you know, look, get over yourself, man. We're just here to have some fun. You know, and take some pictures. So be light. You know, don't think you're in the movies here. It's all about the fun, and you will, if you're doing those things, get, of course, a more spontaneous expression. Now, finally, remember that in all of this, there are techniques, photo sciences and techniques that you will need to apply. And of course, the first thing you've got to remember is light. You know, to get a great pose or a great expression in bad light, well, you know, so before you've even started, hopefully you've taken for granted that you need to put your subject in the right light so that no matter what you're doing, you're going to get a well-lit photograph, whether it be available light or studio light. Naturally, that is, of course, a concern that you need to establish before you even begin. Light's very important, and it can make or break your photograph. So, I mean, I always teach one major rule. If I'm teaching a student wedding photography, particularly, but it applies in available light portraiture too, I teach one thing, and that is find the light and put him in it. And I've said that on this podcast before. Find the light and put him in it, and you are three quarters of the way there. So that's something that you establish initially. Be conscious of the nature of the light in which you place your subject and how it affects their shape, their form, how it lights their face, and the nature of the mood of that light will also transfer across into the image, and the two have to be congruent. Light evokes emotions, and it translates character and appearances, and it can change everything about your image. If the way you're posing is different to perhaps what the light is doing, you can find yourself being very incongruent there, and there can be conflicts in the image. So make sure that your light is correct. And of course, what lens you use, what depth of field you use, those things are vital, and we've talked about those many times in this podcast. Why I live in my 85mm 1.8, for instance, is clear when you look at the images that I take with it, because it's a beautiful focal length to work with comfortably with people, and at the same time, it is also, you know, minimal depth of field. Now, I've just received, as I think I've already mentioned, my Tamron 183.5 macro.
Oh, you got it.
I've got it, and it's a gorgeous lens. I love it. Absolutely love it. It's very
Shelton's camera porn.
It's fabulous. I mean, it's I really do love it. The fact that it's a 180, which on a digital like a D200 is about a 270, f3.5 at infinity, because it closes down as you get into macro. But here's the thing. If I was shooting with a 135mm camera, it'd be 1:1 macro.
Say that again.
If I was shooting with a 35mm film camera,
right,
or full frame as the Canon calls it,
yep,
it would be a 1:1 macro.
Right.
So anything that was 24x36mm would fill the frame, in other words, with a 180, and it's just gorgeous. So I want the opportunity to get out and photograph people with this lens, because I can tighten up, you know, I can stand several, you know, a few meters away from my subject and tighten up completely on just one section of the face. I can get that tight and there, and not have to get in so close that I'm at an uncomfortable range. So
is this a zoom lens or a prime lens?
Prime. It's I do love a prime lens.
Yeah.
I really do. I feel comfortable with primes because you always know where you stand. Haha, no pun intended.
Yep.
You always know where to be with a prime lens, how far away to achieve this or that or the other. Now, they say, yes, of course you can do that. You can stand anywhere with a zoom and do the same thing, but that's not true, because as you zoom in and out, the nature of the lens perspective alters completely.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, you always know what the perspective is going to be with a prime lens. If I put on a wide angle, I always know it's going to go wah. And if I put on a telephoto, it's going to go whoop. Those are the sounds that those lens make, by the way. So you always know. I feel very comfortable with prime lenses.
And by the way, those are patented sounds, so you can't recreate them, listeners.
Yes, no, that's right. Yes, and we will put those sounds on the site so that you know exactly what to listen for when you're using your
If you hear Zooms. Someone else using that sound, let us know.
We would appreciate it, I think, yes. We would appreciate it because that's direct infringement of copyright. Yep, yep. So a wide-angle lens goes wah, and a telephoto goes whoop, and you know exactly what it's going to do. So I'm going to get, sooner or later, I'm going to get the chance to really seriously work with this lens and show what that will do.
Mm.
But your choice of lens...
We look forward to seeing some shots.
Mm-mm. Oh, me too. Me too. I'm looking forward to really getting out and using it. I wanted to use it on the wedding on Sunday, but just no opportunities arose. So I'm going to have to set something up just so I can get out and shoot with this beautiful new lens of mine.
Well, weren't you going to go and get a bikini model for us? And
look, I know. It was an idea, but it's very cold here in Melbourne at the moment. So no one was up for the task, unfortunately.
Okay.
But look, if Bob Iverson is still interested in having me come north where it's summer at the moment, I'm all for, you know, all for that. And, you know, I'll bring my 180 with me and we can have some fun together. So, you know, that would be fine. But I will. The reason I mention this is because find a lens you're comfortable with. And it could, I'm not saying don't use a zoom, but I'm just saying that, you know, these are part of the photographic aspects of the techniques behind spontaneous portraits. You need to also be working with what you're comfortable with as a photographer. Mm. And I would suggest always a prime, to be honest. A lot of photographers would disagree with me. This is my own personal way of working. But if I'm going to set up something spontaneous, I prefer to work with a prime so that I know where I am, he or she knows where she is, and for that set of photographs, I use that lens, and I know exactly where to be. And then if I'm going to change, well, I'll change, you know, the way I'm working, and I want a more wide-angle perspective, then I'll you know, change to a wide-angle lens. That's just my way of working, but it's comfortable for me. I would, and I always make sure that you embark upon the shoot having your light right and comfortable for you, and the lens and camera all set up so that you can just off you go and everything is ready to rock. If you're having to stop and change lenses and stop and change all your exposure settings and all that during what you're trying to achieve as a spontaneous, candid portrait shoot, you're only going to break the flow. So make sure that you are set and ready to go with a light, a camera, exposure, all that kind of thing, reflectors in place, whatever you're doing, and then the rest is the interaction between you and your subject. Give it time, have some fun, and make sure that you remember you're dealing with an individual or a set of two individuals, or however many are in the photo, that have their own way of presenting themselves.
Yeah.
Don't, you know, and don't force anything upon them other than to have a good time and make sure you get great photographs. If you've done this and you have some images you want to show us, we would love to see them. And if you have something to contribute, we're not so arrogant here at Shutters Inc. that we can't take suggestions.
No,
look, we'll definitely take them. We just won't tell anybody else. But, you know, by all means, make sure that, you know, if you've done this or have had some successful tips, you know, things that have worked for you that we can pass on, we'd love to hear from you, wouldn't we, mate?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So, by and large, and I was saying this to Bruce before we started recording, that our little podcast here is becoming sort of like an audio forum because we're getting so much interaction from people that I think we're all starting to know each other, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
It's great. And we can bring peace to the world through podcasts and photography. That'd be great.
It's a noble concept.
A noble concept, yes. Distant, but noble.
Yes. Well, mate, thank you for that.
Oh, my pleasure.
I will. I'll definitely be listening back to this one because, as I've mentioned to you prior to recording, I'm shooting a wedding in September, so
I think we should. We should
think about.
Well, we should talk about some tips for wedding photography in each issue of the podcast between now and then. Would that be a
What
date is your wedding?
22nd, I think, from memory.
All right. Fabulous. Well, we'll do that.
Mm.
We'll start throwing in some tips that will help you with your wedding photography because we all get asked to shoot weddings. You know, friends are saying, mate, I'm getting married. I can't afford these. Who do these photographers think they are? So can you take some pictures? Sure. And then you find yourself gulping and screeching and, you know, how am I going to do this? It's, you know, it is difficult to do a professional job at a wedding, which is why we charge exorbitant amounts of money. But there's no reason you can't get some beautiful pictures. picture. So we'll talk about some ways to do that over the next few podcasts for you. Beautiful. And if nobody else benefits, at least you will, Bruce.
Thank you, mate.
You listen to this thing? I mean, you listen, don't you? You're one of our listeners.
Yep. All righty. We will catch up with you next week then.
Looking forward to it, mate. Looking forward to it.
All right, mate. See ya.
See ya. Bye.
Now, how much of that did you understand?
Audio to You delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable. You be the boss. Hear what you want to hear.
When you want to hear.
Hit us today. And remember, Control D to bookmark. AudioToYou.com.
It's all over, Marge. It's all over.